But if you're the president of the United States, whatever outlet you appear on becomes big, right? And you want to appear on outlets that, you know, align with your view of what the stakes in the election are. And like, make people pay attention to us. Make people pay attention to Mehdi Hasan. Make people pay attention to Chris Hayes.
Hey, everyone. You're listening to a free preview of the Politics Podcast. In this episode, Matt and I will examine the widening rift between Biden world and the New York Times. And I think it's really between Democrats and mainstream news outlets more generally. I think we've reached a potentially significant inflection point, and a lot might turn on whether mainstream news is as receptive to good faith criticism from liberals as they have been in the past to ref working from the right. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. And if you want to hear the whole thing, you can upgrade your subscription to paid at politics.fm. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Politics Podcast. I'm Brian Beutler.
I'm Matthew Iglesias.
So this week, what's going on at the New York Times and between Joe Biden and the New York Times? How much does it matter if the animosity between the two of them lingers? And who's actually right about the fight that they're having? Is it the Times or the Times' critics? But before we get to any of that, we have a couple of oopsies to correct from last week.
Yes.
Matt, do you want to go first with your oopsie?
So I had said that Corinne Jean-Pierre did not have campaign experience.
She's the White House press secretary.
I said that she didn't have campaign experience, which was relevant because even though she's not on the Biden reelection campaign in a technical sense, obviously that is what she's doing. That's not correct. She had jobs on both of Obama's campaigns. But they were, one of them, she was a regional political director, and one of them, she was a battleground state's deputy director. So these were not rapid response or press secretary type jobs. She wasn't performing the kind of role that she performs now, where journalists would try to like jam her up on the tough questions of the day. But just to be clear, she was in roles on those campaigns.
All right, fair enough. Our regrets and apologies to Corinne. And then I owe a big apology to Russian President Vladimir Putin because I, when we were talking about Christy
Noem. He holds
Noem
a grudge, too.
He's like, I'm going to end up radiation poisoned. He when we were talking about Christy Noem and her violence towards dogs last week, I suggested a natural affinity between her and Putin, who I said hated dogs, but I had it backwards. And I knew this, but it was just, I pulled a Joe Biden being old thing. Vladimir Putin loves dogs. The thing that I was remembering but misconstrued is that he knew that former German Chancellor Angela Merkel is deathly afraid of dogs. Mm. And so he would bring his attack dogs, basically, I guess, with him to meet her in order to distress her because he's an asshole. So maybe there isn't an affinity on these grounds, at least between Christy Noem and Vladimir Putin. But I do owe Putin, a dog lover, myself, a little bit of an apology.
It's good. Good that we got that straight. You know, facts matter on podcasting and the New York Times.
Just real quick stage setting here. A couple weeks back, just right before the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Politico ran it was pretty detailed media piece. It was a little gossipy, but there was some real stuff in there about tensions between the White House and the Biden campaign on the one hand and the New York Times. And the rift boils down to that Biden has, I think, a fairly standard set of liberal slanted complaints about political journalism in general and at the Times in particular in the Trump years. Like, are they normalizing him? Are they treating his threat to democracy with the sort of oomph and seriousness it deserves. And the Times is kind of leaning into their, focus on polling and trivia and the things that Biden doesn't want them to focus on, in part because the leadership there is apparently pissed that Biden won't give them an exclusive sit-down interview.
I think we should be specific about this because there was a back and forth and denials, right? So the way Politico characterized it, or certainly the way liberals characterized Politico's reporting, is that the New York Times was angry that Biden has not done a sit-down interview with them and is sort of punishing the White House for that. The Times strenuously denies that, but I think the slightly more generous but amounts to the same thing construal is that the Times has indulged a lot of scrutiny of Joe Biden's age, right? Like this is there's an anti-Biden narrative that he is too old. The Times has, I think, promoted that narrative, and they believe, like top decision makers at the Times believe, that Biden's reluctance to do long form sit down interviews with their staff is evidence that he's too old, right? So like that's their sort of mental processing of it, you know, is that like if Joe Biden was up to the job, like he'd be doing a big sit down with Maggie Haberman.
Okay. I mean,
because I don't want this to be like we're doing a segment based on the Politico story, but the Times denies it. Like the Times does deny it. But I think like what the Times is denying is that they are acting out of revenge against Biden. But the fact is, they are very hung up on this topic.
I did a episode of Greg Sargent's podcast with him when that Politico piece came out. And he was like, I think similarly, like, a little dubious of that claim in the piece, but that claim was sourced to a New York Times journal, anonymized, but like there was a quote there. It wasn't just Politico reporter asserting. And like, it is worth noting that this is not like some like junior upstart Politico reporter. It's a senior, like a well-established reporter. And there is a lot of connective tissue between Politico and the New York Times political desk. Like,
yes,
they go back and forth. They hire, you know, Politico is a feeder of the New York Times. A couple of all-star New York Times reporters who came from Politico just went back. I mean, they are...
I completely agree. I'm bringing this up just to say that, like, when you read a vehement denial of something, you need to pay attention to exactly what is being denied, right? And, like, what they are denying is that A.G. Sulzberger is there twirling his mustache, being like, we got to crush him on age until he agrees to do an interview. Which, like, sure, it's because everybody in their own subjective understanding of the world is, like, doing the right thing. And so they are just, like, calling balls and strikes, and they see this damning evidence. But then it's like you look at anything, right? And so it's like, so Biden goes and does a bunch of podcasts, and they're like, well, that doesn't count. And then Biden went on Howard Stern, and they gave very little coverage to that interview. You know, as if like they weren't actually that interested in the question of it. And then the last two paragraphs of the write-ups were all about how Biden has been ducking interviews with traditional media. And so that is like, yes, like they have decided to jab a knife in the side of the White House over the White House's choice of interview strategy,
right,
which like is really not unique to this particular dynamic, but like very frequently, the thing that high-end journalists feel most comfortable like editorializing about is like their own specific treatment. And it's like
whether they have access to the White House. They will like it's been 100 days since Barack Obama did a press conference or whatever, as like a tier one story.
Yeah. And you know, I think as a person, you know, I have both managed to have like a career in Washington political journalism, but also never really be, you know, I've never been in the White House press corps, you know, I never like been on Air Force One or in a gaggle. It's like the question you have to ask yourself is like, is it possible for journalists to get like questions answered? Like, is there something we're not knowing? Like, what is the complaint exactly about? And it's like, I feel reasonably well-informed about the Biden administration's policymaking, both where I agree with them and where I disagree with them. Like, it's not some black hole of non-transparency. The Trump administration, to an extent, was, but that, even so, was like mostly chaos rather than anything else, and a lack of professionalism. And like, I wish Joe Biden would do an on-camera interview with the Politics Podcast. Like, that would be great. He should do that. But, like, it's ridiculous to let that become the pivot point of your own coverage, that, like, you would like to score an interview.
I'm glad you said that because you know, I think it's very clear that they want one of these marquee, you know, hour-long Oval Office interviews that feeds days worth of stories and, you know, everyone's chasing the New York Times and it's like, you know, it's like a rite of passage and they feel like they're entitled to it. Because I'm pretty confident that if their investigative team had like an important scoop, like about Hunter Biden, they got the goods on Hunter Biden doing something that had not yet surfaced in congressional investigations or criminal investigations. And, you know, there was some suggestion that maybe Joe Biden was involved. They would go to the White House. And if it was like really that serious, Joe Biden would talk to them about that, right?
The perennial problem of these interviews, which like is I think like genuinely bad for America, is that presidents have started systematically subjecting themselves to fewer like hard news interviews. And then because they want to do less of it, now more and more when you get the chance, it's like blood sport, right? So it's like, here's my chance to like really show them. Which then just makes people not want to do it. You know, like, I think it would be great for Biden to sit down with, I don't know, with Jim Tankersley and ask some questions about the state of the economy and the American Rescue Plan and, you know, whatever else. But, like, we all know that if Biden did an interview, like, the first question would be, like, aren't you too old?
Yeah.
And then Biden would be like, no, I'm not too old. And they'd be like, but come on, you're too old. And then Biden would get testy. And then it'd be like, ah, you're getting testy. You know, it's like, it's just this kind of like dumb trap that there's no really great way out of. But then also in the contemporary media landscape, like you can just like go on Howard Stern and talk about
your
life experience,
yeah.
And also like reach people who don't read the New York Times,
right,
who are in fact the voters Biden needs to reach. Anyway, this pivoted into an interview that Joe Kahn did with Ben Smith at Semaphore. And Ben, who is a very clever interviewer, queued this up for maximum engagement by asking Kahn like a kind of straw man question. That's like, Joe Kahn, like, do you agree with liberals who say that to save American democracy, like the New York Times should just tank constantly and help Biden win the election? So then Kahn was able to be like, no, I believe in the role of journalism. And it's like, okay, like
you're jumping the gun a little bit because after the Politico piece ran, but before Smith and Kahn sat down for this, Biden addressed the press corps at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
8 years ago, you could have written off it as just Trump talk, but no longer, not after January 6th. I'm sincerely not asking of you to take sides, but asking you to rise up to the seriousness of the moment. Move past the horse race numbers and the gotcha moments and the distractions, the sideshows that have come to dominate and sensationalize our politics. And focus on what's actually at stake. And I think in your hearts, you know it was at stake. The stakes couldn't be higher. Every single one of us has a role to play, a serious role to play, in making sure democracy endures, American democracy. I have more of my role, but in all due respect, so do you. In the age of disinformation, credible information that people can trust is more important than ever. And that makes you, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, makes you more important than ever.
I think that the like a reasonable, it's a little generous, but I think honest assessment of what Biden was saying was if you know how to make everyone in America aware of my age and of Hillary Clinton's emails by cluttering up your front page with it and assigning multiple reporters to it and treating it like it's very important news, you can do the same thing with respect to Donald Trump's authoritarian campaign promises. And that might help me incidentally, but it's right in your core duty. Like you should feel obligated to make people aware of those things. And if it helps me, fine. If maybe Donald Trump just gets tired of taking heat for it and becomes less of a authoritarian, also fine. But like, don't let people like remain underinformed about this while you guys are chasing dumb fucking stories about polling and my age. And I feel like that's, you know, I like as a newsroom leader could quibble with it, but it's not what Ben Smith said when he interviewed Joe Kahn, right? He said, like, the liberal complaint is that you're not in the tank for Biden more. And Biden, like, you know, headed off, sure, attempted to head off that critique in advance by saying, no, this is not about you just, like, burying negative stories about me. It's about you using your news judgment to prioritize the stakes of the election and, like, lend more resources to higher tier issues.
Yeah, I mean, look, though, like, I mean, obviously every president wants the media to cover their administration more positively and cover their opponent more negatively. To me, that was like, I guess this is like Smith just like injecting the Biden frame into this, just like cued Kahn up to give this response that I think as text is hard to disagree with, where he's like, we need to cover the issues fairly. Like, we can't be like Pravda or Xinhua News, which is true. But then, as you say, like, Biden said that's not what he wanted and blah, 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 blah. But then Kahn got into the more contentious part, right?
Yeah.
Which is, he said that, like, democracy is not the issue that most people say is most important to them. Most people say that the issue that's most important to them are immigration and inflation. And so what are we supposed to do? Just not cover those issues because it's inconvenient to Biden? So I got a lot of thoughts on that. I mean, starting with, like, it's a little odd to say that you should cover issues in the order that polls tell you people say they are important.
It's just a made up.
That's not.
We both got trained as journalists, and that was never the way stories were assigned. You know what I mean?
I mean, especially for the New York Times, who, if you ask anyone, like, why do we talk so much about the New York Times? Like, it's not that many people read the New York Times, right? It's like, well, the New York Times has incredible agenda setting power for the entire national media. And like, if you went to the New York Times' investigative desk and were like, why are you looking into this politician who nobody's ever heard of? They'd be like, well, because if we uncover a scandal, then people will hear about it, right? Like, that's journalism. Like, he can't seriously mean that the way he runs the New York Times is he looks at Nate Cohn's issue prioritization polls and then doles out journalistic resources in proportion to their answer. Like, that doesn't make sense.
That is the read, right? That is what...
That's what he said.
Yeah, I know. And I think we're going to get into this in a second. Like, it's not a defensible, like, ethic for running a newsroom, but it's also not, like, just empirically what the New York Times is doing. But it's like, the reason it bugs me more than just that it's unjustifiable is that it like, there is like a very common two-step that mainstream news outlet leaders do when confronted specifically with this liberal criticism, right? That they normalize Trump, that they're not, their coverage doesn't convey significant alarm or sufficient alarm about Trump's threat to democracies. They'll say, that's not our job. It's Democrats' job to beat back the threat to democracy by beating Donald Trump. But like, that's out of one half of their mouth, because the other half of their mouth is like mining for new subscribers by talking about how democracy dies in darkness and how free press is essential to an informed citizenry. And, you know, basically, like, newspapers are the tip of the spear for democracy. And so that's why you should give us your money.
Yes.
It can't be both things, right? Like,
I mean,
either you are or you aren't.
But this is where, like, I both understand why Joe Kahn did not want to give, like, a fully candid interview to Ben Smith about the dilemmas of running the New York Times. But, like, the whole thing, I think, would benefit from a little less defensiveness and a little more candor about, like, business. Like, he alluded to the fact that, like, part of what's going on at the Times is that the top leadership of the Times felt that the Times as an institution fell too prey to like internal staffer activism during the 2020 election cycle, right? And there is like a kind of you know, Thermidorian reaction being driven by Times leadership, which if you work in media, if you hear any gossip from people in middle management at the Times, is like definitely happening. You know, the owners and top ranking people decided that like they need to lay down the law a little bit and incorporate some of the criticisms that James Bennett and Barry Weiss were making of the Times as an institution into their coverage. Another thing that's happening is like they're trying to make money. The Times is a publicly traded company. It is controlled by the Sulzberger family. The Sulzbergers are wealthy, but they're not rich like Jeff Bezos. You know what I mean? They're not.
They can't float the Times indefinitely if it starts to.
Right. What makes them wealthy is the fact that they own the New York Times, right? It's not that they don't have some other business that they own. So it really matters a lot to them whether the Times is a successful business. And it has been a very successful business. You know, like when I launched Vox, when investors were pouring money into BuzzFeed, people thought there was going to be this wave of disruption. But the Times, you know, through its subscription program, through its high-end advertising, through its investment in these games, like has done really well for itself. And they both benefited financially from Trump's presidency and now are surfing the post-Trump era in various ways that is hard. And like that's what they're doing on some level. So like, I mean, I was just checking, like, has the New York Times been covering inflation and immigration a lot? And that's hurting Biden. And, you know, as far as I can tell, they aren't. Like, they have run more articles that mention Kristi Noem killing her dog than they have articles mentioning inflation over the past few days. And, like, they talked about Kristi Noem killing her dog for the exact same reason you and I talked about Kristi Noem killing her dog.
Cynical cash grab.
You know, I mean, not as a cynical cash grab, but it's like she's one of the big characters of American politics over the past few years. Even though South Dakota is a small state, she's like a good-looking woman who's an interesting character who might have been Trump's vice president, who put out this memoir, who said something nutty in it. This thing about lying about Kim Jong-un seems probably more significant, but it's just like a fun, interesting story about human drama. If it was true,
I'd call it inhuman drama. She killed a fucking dog.
But so I just mean, like, there's a certain like come off it quality. Like, you could imagine a publication that was like laser focused on hard news reporting about Joe Biden and policy that was in some way unflattering to him and just being like, you know, here we go. But like, the thing that is bugging the White House about the New York Times' coverage of the race is not their coverage of inflation or immigration or their coverage of Kristi Noem's dog. It's the way they are portraying the age issue as a question of stakes, which ties back into the coverage of the email server issue, where, like, you go back to 2016, you ask any liberal, like, why are you mad at the New York Times? It's not that the email server stories were inaccurate, and it's not that the Times didn't run any tough stories about Trump. It's that the quantity of email server stories and the one-sidedness of email server stories suggested to a person who just scans the paper on a daily basis that, like, the big thing at stake, or one of the biggest things at stake in 2016, was which candidate would comply more rigorously with federal document retention and information security policies. And that candidate was Donald Trump. And like, neither of those things are true. That was not one of the most important things at stake in 2016. And there was no reason to believe that Donald Trump would be better on that issue. Similarly, Joe Biden is in fact old. Like, that is true. He's only a little bit older than Donald Trump. And nobody can articulate why it is significant that either of these guys is old, like in the grand scheme of things. If I'm trying to like, if you try to spell out rationally, like what difference does it make who wins? You can talk about the threats to democracy. You could talk about fucking inflation if you want. But it's like, try to explain like what will happen to me, to you, to anybody in America if the president is Joe Biden's age or it's Trump's age. It's very, seems small to me. Like, not untrue, but like, I don't know. I just like, I would love it. I don't want to say I would. It would be a fascinating exercise to live in a world where there were lots of stories about inflation at the New York Times. And the White House was like, why are you writing so much about inflation when you should be writing about democracy? But like, that's not what's happening. Like they're, you know, it's the usual blend from any mainstream news outlet, which is like a lot of good reporting and then a lot of stuff that's like kind of nonsense and a lot of ingesting of conservative talking points without securing credibility among conservative readers.
There are some conservative Catholic commentators who seem fixed on the age issue because they think it can hurt Joe Biden, but I'm old enough to remember that they were huge fans of Pope John Paul II when he was president of Catholicism. And go back and look at what he looked like near the end of his tenure.
Right.
Very old.
Well, and it's just like, it's, I just think everything about this is a little bit disingenuous, you know, like it.
I think that like you alluded to it, they homed in on the email server story and then this year on the age story. And it's, you know, often I think this gets distilled down as like they need to find something to offset all the negative stories about Trump because Trump is so transgressive that there's lots of bad things about him to cover and they need to like gin up some balance. But like it's, that's a problem. But to me, it's a little bit more than that, right? Like the analogy I've drawn in the past is that there's like, think about how, like, the difference between an 80s or 1990s sitcom, where there's really no plot continuity episode to episode, right? Like, one episode's about one thing, and then it's all kind of forgotten because the next episode's about something completely different. And it doesn't really matter. And you can kind of pick up the show in the middle because there's really, the point of the show is not to have, like, a single dramatic arc. And then contrast that with like prestige TV, where it really is kind of this operatic story, like Breaking Bad, where like it, you really do need to watch the episodes in sequence or you won't know what's happening. And like the way they cover Donald Trump is like the first thing, where it's like this bad thing happens, but then they kind of shelve it to cover the next bad thing that happens. And you don't create a picture of somebody who's like a, you know, basically a serial transgressive necessarily, because they just kind of toggle from one to the next. Whereas because they have to, or they feel compelled to offset that with some sort of, you know, contentious coverage of his opponents, and their opponents, his opponents have like fewer scandals, they pick one. And because it's a single story, it develops this like narrative thread through it. And so suddenly the story of the election is that story. And it's, I think, just like genuinely unfair to what is essentially like what we're saying is like the more ethical candidate gets more harmful press coverage because the negative stories about him or her are spun into a saga.
Right. But let's also, I mean, so the thing that I think exists as subtext to all of these kind of controversies is that the, you know, the management of the New York Times and of CNN does not want to do like instrumentally constructive coverage for progressive causes. Whereas the management and ownership of Fox News and Newsmax and AM talk radio do want to do that for conservative coverage. Which is fine. I mean, everybody's allowed to like have whatever aspirations they want for their business. But the audience for conservative news likes to read and watch these conservative outlets. Whereas the audience, like the liberal audience, really likes to read the New York Times, which is fine. But it means that there's a kind of an asymmetry, right? Where if the Times runs 5 negative stories about Trump and 1 negative story about Biden, that's bad for Biden. Right. And that's like, it's just a tricky issue to talk about, you know, because like, I think that if you are, Carolyn Ryan or whoever, I think Carolyn Ryan is in charge of the politics coverage. She's going to be like, what do you want me to do? Right. Like I'm running stories, but I do care. I mean, I care about editorial integrity and other things, but like, I also do care about outcomes for the country. So, you know, if you look at the politics coverage, I mean, it's not exactly how Joe Kahn portrayed it. It's not as high-minded as that. But, you know, it's pretty like, I don't know what you would think, just like people writing articles about politics. If you go to the lifestyle issue, like there's a question about an article, Sweet Green is introducing steak. What about its climate goals? I read an article. It was about a conference that was going to an academic conference that was about queer food and what is the nature of queer food. There's these real estate listings, and they're all the real estate articles are about very expensive small apartments in urban areas. You know, there's a thing about Zendaya. There's a thing about jackfruit tacos. It's lifestyle news for liberals because like that's who reads the New York Times. There was an ethicist column that was about a parent who is upset because her son likes to play with toy guns, right? And the column doesn't say like you have to prevent him from playing with toy guns. Like it's a better column than that, but it also doesn't like, that's what they ran an article on. Like the presumed audience for the New York Times is the kind of people who at least have friends who worry about little boys playing with toy guns. It's not, people like my father-in-law who think that Donald Trump is a psychotic, but worry that liberals are going to take their guns away. That's not who the paper is for, which is, I mean, whatever. I mean, again, you can do what you want, but it creates this perverse situation where any good reporting that the Times does on Republicans, conservatives just tune out because it's like a liberal paper.
That's preaching to the choir, whereas like the negative information about Biden might actually put progressive readers off.
And if I could execute on like the high-minded mission of like, we need a newspaper for everyone, we need a well-informed populace, it's like I would tell them, it's like you have to get more moderate in all of your coverage of everything that isn't American politics, which like they don't want to do because it would be very financially costly. Actually, to like purge the food section of communists.
Start a NASCAR section.
I saw this when I was at management at Vox. You know, if you want to hire people who are like smart and can write fast and do clean copy and like make good jokes and understand headlines to write about television shows, just like most of the applicants you get are going to be very left-wing in their political opinions. To like overbid the market to only get like conservatives to write about How I Met Your Mother would be like a very expensive undertaking. And like nobody wants to do it, you know? It'd be like trying to run an oil company with only liberals. You know, like it wouldn't work.
What do you think the politics coverage at the New York Times would look like if it pandered to its audience in the same way that the culture section does? Would it, I mean, it would be more obviously left wing. Would it be, you know, like in a way that helped Biden or hurt him?
Like, I mean, it's hard to say.
Like, it would depend. Like, would they channel all that energy into just being like anti-Trump propaganda? Or would it be like,
it would have that heavy democracy frame. You know what I mean?
But it could also be like, why won't Biden replace beef with jackfruit? In which case,
I mean, it's
like
possible
bad.
if it gets like too left. But I mean, I just think, you know, like the Times has a lot of coverage of the war in Gaza, right? And like, if you just wanted to do propaganda for Biden, you would just kind of like backshelf that whole topic, right? But if you were really left wing, if you really wanted to represent probably the views of rank and file staffers, you would probably do more leftist coverage of the Gaza issue, you know? And so those are all those kinds of things. But like what Fox does is like strategic coalition management, right? If there's a topic that like divides conservatives, they just don't cover it. You know, and if there's they talk about things that they all agree on, or they very strategically like discipline dissidents for some kind of reason, but they don't air the dirty laundry, right? Like they are not doing segments where people talk about, is this 10% tariff idea, like, does that really make sense? And you know, that is propaganda. But like what the Times is doing, I don't know. It's like, it's not what they say they're doing because they're not being honest about the fact that they're running a commercial enterprise, but they want people to subscribe to them. You know, like they want to have it both ways, right? Like they want to be a pillar of democracy. They want to have a liberal readership. But then like, they don't want to like do the work. They don't want to leave cash on the table.
I feel like they are quite aware. I don't know that necessarily their politics coverage is a loss leader, but it's certainly less lucrative than the crossword, right? You know?
Yeah.
And so they do, there is in some sense, like they're accepting a financial hit to do something that they think of as a higher calling than just profit making, which is good. I mean, journalism needs that, or else it's all going to suck, right? But then, like, what is that thing? What is the higher calling? And like Joe Kahn says, well, we just follow the polls and it tells, you know, and A, they're not doing that, but B, like that, any news outlet that tried to do that would be like an abysmal place for a journalist to work. It would produce a bunch of bad pandering journalism.
Yes.
Like there is, you know, the reason like journalism selects for a specific kind of person is you want somebody who can like immerse themselves in a field and develop a fluency in it and then bring that knowledge in plain language back to a readership or a viewership. And that's not what the journalism that Joe Kahn describes would be about at all. And maybe this is like actually a good place to like put up a paywall and we can like have a conversation about like, should like, are the things that Joe Biden and I, and maybe you like wish the New York Times would do or do better? Like, are they fair demands? Like could that succeed in the same way that what the New York Times is doing now is working in some way? Because I do think that that's ultimately the crux of it. And like, it's the, like if there's going to be a renewed happy symbiosis between the Democratic Party and mainstream media, I think it's going to have to entail some give on the media side on this question. And like the indication I got from the Smith Kahn interview is like, that's not coming. But maybe, and maybe you can like play devil's advocate and tell me why they're right. Okay. If you want to hear that, and I know you do, it sounds super fascinating. Go to politics.fm and upgrade your subscription to paid.